How to Read a Poem, Grey Goose and Gander. This piece appeared in Poetry Northwest in response to editor David Beispiel's call for contributions on the subject of how to read a poem. I revised it somewhat for publication here. I cannot retrieve the original date of publication from my files or any online source, but I place it here as a best guess, or perhaps on a whim. How to Read a Poem is Allowed. There are I poems, of course. I'm fond of E.E. Cummings. But to me, they are all offshoots, technologically enabled derivatives of the Heard poem. The words the eyes see are a notation, a score. The mind can only fully understand them through the ear. But, being words, they say the meaning of their music. Words sung to a tune make a song. When the words are the tune, you have a poem. This can be a big deal, like the Aeneid or the Canterbury Tales, or a very small one, like this. Grey Goose and Gander, waft your wings together, and carry the good king's daughter over the One Strand River. I read it first in the Oxford Nursery Rhyme Book by Iona and Peter Opie, a source of endless joy to myself and the people who at various times have sat on my lap. I'll try to describe the music and the meaning as I hear them, hoping to clarify my idea of how they work together, or rather, are aspects of one thing. The tune of the little poem is most obvious in its repeated sounds, the alliterations of the first letter of stressed syllables, G, 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 W, W, G, K, G, K, in the first three lines. And instead of full end rhyme, four slant-rhymed words ending in unstressed er, a syllable pronounced variously in different regions from ah to to, in my dialect, the sound of the r itself, a dull purr which can be extended indefinitely like a vowel. However pronounced, it is a mild syllable, fading off into open silence. All the vowels and consonants of the poem tend toward softness, giving an effect to my ear of silvery hush and spaciousness. As you might expect in an oral form like a nursery rhyme, the beat is strong, reinforced by alliterations. Using S for a stressed syllable and U for unstressed, I read the meter as S-S-U-S-U, S-U-S-U-S-U. U-S-U-U-S-S-S-U, S-U-U-S-S-S-U. You could call it trochaic trimeter with a lot of latitude, but I don't know that that gets us much of anywhere. There are lots of trochees in nursery rhymes, rocking rhythms, but it may be more useful to look at the line as the metric unit, or even the stanza, rather than the foot. In these poems worn down by generations of voices, like river stones by water, to the smoothest and most irreducible shape, each has arrived at its own essential rhythmic logic. The abruptness of a trochaic opening suits the suddenness of the address. Grey Goose and Gander, summoned out of nothing, and no sooner invoked than commanded, waft your wings together. The old word waft for wave needs no explanation to the youngest child. Sound and context are enough. Now the birds are aloft, and the rhythm changes. A pair of unstressed syllables lightens each line before it delivers the weight of three stressed syllables in a row, a trick you don't often meet in formal poems. The rocking chair beat makes me want to put less stress on kings and strand. Good king's daughter, One Strand River. But the complexity of both the meaning and the sound of the words keeps me from unstressing them, forcing me to say all three words slowly, with a mysterious, lingering weightiness. And they are mysterious words. Who is the good king? Who is his daughter? From what folk tale or cloudy history did they arrive? And why is the princess to be carried over the One Strand River, the river that has only one shore? Is it the ocean? Or is it death? No answer. Event is all. The glimpse is given. We can spend the rest of our life enriched by that brief music with its inexhaustible suggestion of flight above vast landscapes, and a story we will never be told.